Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on planning and deploying Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 Part 2. My name is Peter Lammers. In this session, we are going to discuss planning and deployment tasks for Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 and Windows SharePoint Services 3.0. We will expand upon the basic settings and configurations that were covered in the DSK-101 session, Planning and Deploying Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007, Part 1. Although we will give a basic overview of the planning and deployment settings that we discussed in the previous session, we are going to spend more time on advanced settings. This will involve some scripting tips and other initial considerations. You may choose to deploy SharePoint as either a standalone server or in a server farm topology. When deploying the farm topology, you will want to consider whether to use web load balancing. We will talk about what web load balancing is and why you want to use it in just a few minutes. There are other configuration settings, such as authentication, that you'll want to determine before you deploy SharePoint. Office SharePoint Server 2007 also includes advanced extranet support and allows for inter-farm shared services. Both of these have administrative implications, such as those pertaining to security. Once you have your topology determined and your deployment schedule established, there are some operational tasks to perform. Password management has been simplified with the default single sign-on configuration with SharePoint 2007. Additional security measures include ensuring that your servers are updated with the latest security patches and service packs. In addition to security, you will want to determine your disaster recovery strategy. We will discuss ways to perform disaster recovery. From the basic recycle bin to the SharePoint Backup Restore utility to SQL Backup Restore, we will show you some options to secure your organization's data. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here is a brief overview of what would be helpful but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to the session or to reference afterwards. We are going to be introducing the newest version of Windows SharePoint Services. It would be helpful if you had some experience with or knowledge of Windows SharePoint Services version 2, including the portal sites. SharePoint Portal Server has been replaced with Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007. However, some knowledge of the previous server would be helpful when we are covering the history of SharePoint and to reference improvements with the new server. It would also be helpful to have knowledge of Windows Server 2003 administration, as many of the areas we will discuss pertain to server administration. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. First, we will look at some initial considerations for deploying a farm along with some setup hints. Next, we are going to look at some advanced configuration considerations. In this section, we will examine ways to deploy SharePoint 2007 on the extranet and how to configure inter-farm shared services. Finally, we will look at how to deploy SharePoint 2007 with steady-state administration. In addition, we will examine operational tasks and how to perform patching and apply service packs. As you begin deploying your farm, there are a few initial considerations to keep in mind. First, you need to understand your deployment needs. At a minimum, you should have an understanding of your users, content, and usage. You may also want to consider data composition, user load, long-running operations, performance, availability and reliability, and other network considerations. When deploying SharePoint 2007, you should also make sure to create the right size topology for your organization. The smallest topology is a single server deployment, where you'll have a single server with all the necessary components to run SharePoint services. You may choose to create a farm topology where you will divide roles among more than one server. As your performance needs increase, you will want to increase the size of your farm. You also have the option for a multi-farm topology. The advantages of a multi-farm topology include security and process isolation, which may be necessary due to business demands. To determine the best size topology for your organization, you will want to incrementally grow or shrink your deployment to meet your individual needs. Finally, you will want to prepare your servers for deployment. Depending on the topology you have chosen, you will need to prepare the servers to meet that topology's requirements. The application servers should either have Windows Server 2003 or Windows Server Longhorn. If you have a separate database server, you will want to make sure your SQL Server version is up to date. Since the SharePoint platform operates on an ASP.NET 2.0 foundation, another thing to consider is Windows Workflow Foundation. Windows Workflow Foundation is the programming model, engine, and tools for quickly building workflow-enabled applications on Windows. Windows Workflow Foundation includes support for both system workflow and human workflow across a wide range of scenarios, including workflow within a line of business applications, user interface page flow, document-centric workflow, human workflow, composite workflow for service-oriented applications, business rule-driven workflow, and workflow for systems management. By identifying your setup and using scripts, you can simplify the setup process. First, identify whether you have a basic or advanced setup. A basic setup will be a single server situation, and a server farm is a more advanced deployment. When setting up your deployment, you can determine whether to have a single web front-end server or a complete web server setup. Once you have determined your setup, you can use some scripts to simplify the process. Some executables can help you with your scripts. Setup.exe will put binaries on the computer. This requires config.xml. psconfig.exe is used to enable SharePoint services, and stsadmin.exe configures SharePoint services and creates shared services and sites. A unified user interface supplies a consistent experience for the user and allows for easier expansion. The site master page supplies the context of the page. It is recommended that you do not change the site master page, as a site user navigates from one page to another within a single site in your site collection. To supply consistent branding and user interface, you can use the same site master page across all sites in your site collection. You may decide to change the master page and subsites of the site hierarchy to change the branding. For example, a company may have different subsites for separate brands of products. In this case, you may want to change the site master page for these subsites to reflect the different brands. Most organizations require redundancy at the web front end, or WFE tier. There are times when there should be a three-server farm with one server running the WFE role. In order to determine if your organization requires redundancy at the WFE tier, ask yourself the following questions. Is your overall availability requirement below 99%? Is the availability of your data critical? Can your organization tolerate temporary loss of access to the data? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, you should consider using web load balancing. The next step is to plan which WFE load balancing technology to implement. Windows SharePoint Services version 3 supports two methods of load balancing. The first method is software load balancing, such as network load balancing or NLB services in Windows Server 2003. NLB runs on the front-end web servers and uses the TCP/IP networking protocol to route requests. Because NLB runs on the front-end web servers, it uses the front-end web system resources, trimming the resources you can use for serving web pages. However, the impact on system resources is small, and a software solution can handle up to 32 front-end web servers. The second method of load balancing uses hardware, such as a router or switch box. Load balancing hardware uses your network to direct web site traffic between your front-end web servers. Load balancing hardware is more expensive to set up than software, but does not use any of your front-end web server resources to run. In addition to web load balancing considerations, there are some additional configuration concerns with SharePoint 2007. First, you will want to determine which authentication method to use. One method is basic authentication. Basic authentication is an authentication protocol supported by most web servers and browsers. Although basic authentication transmits users' names and passwords in easily decoded clear text, it has some advantages over more secure authentication methods, in that it works through a proxy server firewall and ensures that a website is accessible by almost any web browser. If you use basic authentication in combination with secure socket layer, commonly known as SSL, encryption, you can help protect the user names and passwords, making your user information more secure. With SSL, a message is encrypted in a secure browser using the web server's public key and then decrypted on the web server using the private key. Another method of authentication is Microsoft Integrated Windows Authentication. Integrated Windows Authentication encrypts user names and passwords in a multiple transaction interaction between client and server, thus making this method more secure than basic authentication. Disadvantages are that this method cannot be performed through a proxy server firewall, and some web browsers do not support it. Integrated Windows Authentication supports Kerberos to provide challenge and response authentication. Kerberos is a protocol based upon ticketing. With Kerberos, a user must provide a valid username and password to an authentication server. The server grants the user a ticket, which can then be used on the network for requesting other network resources. In addition to determining an authentication method, you should decide whether or not to use caching. It is important to remember that caching isn't something you can just add to your application at any point in the development cycle. The application should be designed with caching in mind. Storing frequently used data in memory is not a new concept for ASP developers. However, ASP.NET introduces a new key-value pair object, the cache object. You can programmatically access the cache object and work with it using its properties and methods. This allows you full access to the object and the ability to use advanced caching features. You can also use the ASP.NET cache to store output responses that are transmitted to a web browser. When building enterprise-scale distributed applications, architects and developers are faced with many challenges. Caching mechanisms can be used to help you overcome some of these challenges. Caching techniques are commonly used to improve application performance by storing relevant data as close as possible to the data consumer, thus avoiding repetitive data creation, processing, and transportation. For example, storing data that does not change in a cache can improve performance by minimizing data access operations and eliminating the need to recreate the same data for each request. The same data, business functionality, and user interface fragments are often required by many users and processes in an application. If this information is processed for each request, valuable resources are wasted recreating the same output. Instead, you can store the results in a cache and reuse them for each request. This improves the scalability of your application because as the user base increases, the demand for server resources for these tasks remains constant. Caching data can also help scale the resources of your database server. By storing frequently used data in a cache, fewer database requests are made, meaning that more users can be served. Occasionally, the services that provide information to your application may be unavailable. By storing that data in another place, your application may be able to survive system failures such as network latency, web service problems, or hardware failures. SharePoint provides additional resources for deployment. Now that we have looked at some setup and deployment steps for your SharePoint farm, let's look at some deployment configuration considerations. Microsoft Windows SharePoint Services 3.0 provides an object model for creating and managing incoming and outgoing URLs in cases in which a reverse proxy server must be implemented between the client computer and the web server running Windows SharePoint Services. An incoming URL is the URL of a request when it reaches the web server running Windows SharePoint Services. Windows SharePoint Services determines this URL by examining the application layer protocol, HTTP or HTTPS, the host header in the HTTP packet, and the destination port of the TCP packet. An outgoing URL is the base absolute URL that Windows SharePoint Services uses in the links it generates on the pages that it returns to the user. A reverse proxy configuration may be required when the same SharePoint site must be used for both the corporate intranet and the extranet. In such a case, two virtual servers share the same content, with a reverse proxy applying to only the externally facing server. The internally facing server is directly accessible by HTTP. The externally facing server can be reached only by an SSL request to the reverse proxy server. Advanced extranet support makes it possible for Windows SharePoint Services to use a different protocol, host name, and port number in the links it generates on the pages that it returns to the user. A reverse proxy server receives a request for a particular URL from the client computer. The proxy server then remaps the request to a different URL for the web server running SharePoint. For example, the proxy server may receive a request for https://www.fabricam.com, but then forwards the request to the web server as http://contoso.com. With the advanced extranet support, Windows SharePoint Services can be customized to return the same original URL base in all links on its pages. Windows SharePoint Services examines the packets it receives from the proxy server and isolates the protocol, host name, and port number parts of the request or incoming URL. SharePoint then uses two tables to determine the correct base of the URL to return. One table maps each incoming URL to a particular zone, and the other table maps each zone to a particular outgoing URL. Windows SharePoint Services rewrites the URL shown on its pages using the outgoing-based URL that it finds through the tables. Zones map incoming URLs that Windows SharePoint Services receives from the proxy server to outgoing URLs that it uses in the links it generates on the pages it returns to the user. Five zones per virtual server represent the various ways of accessing the SharePoint site: intranet, internet, extranet, custom, and default. Although each zone can have any number of incoming URLs, each zone can only have one outgoing URL. However, you should note that advanced extranet support applies only to content virtual servers and not to SharePoint Central Administration website or virtual server. This support is available only when Windows SharePoint Services is deployed in non-scalable hosting mode. Let's look at how to configure the extranet. In this demonstration, we will show some new settings with WSS 3.0 for configuring your site for the extranet. Publishing sites externally with Windows SharePoint Services 3.0 involves only a few simple steps. The configuration and management is simplified with a consistent shared interface used for extranet, intranet, and the internet. Prior to configuration, WSS 3.0 will redirect external users to the internal name of the server and the request will fail. Search results might be displayed in a way that would make them inaccessible to users. In addition, users might receive unusable search results whenever they attempt to access the portal site by using a URL that is different from the original URL used for crawling the content. To make the external access work the way you want, you'll need to create an alternate access map to the external URL. This can be done through an easy-to-navigate central administration interface. Alternate access settings provide a way for server farm administrators to ensure that URLs are displayed correctly for the different types of user access. If you install and configure Windows SharePoint Services version 3.0 on a single front-end server, and a user browses to your server, it will render the content that is in your web application. However, if you add subsequent front-end servers to your server farm, the newly added servers will not have alternate access mappings configured to your web application. To map newly added front-end servers to your existing web application, you need to configure alternate access mappings. Before you do this, you need to install and configure Windows SharePoint Services version 3.0 on all front-end servers that you want to add to your server farm, and make sure that the servers are joined to your server farm. We can edit the outbound URLs from the Alternate Access Mappings page. Then we need to choose an alternate access mapping collection. The moss.litwareinc.com URL is the collection we want to modify. Now we're going to add the incoming URL. This is the protocol, host, and port portion of any URL that should be associated with this resource. Each entry on the page can also have alternate access methods for the other zones, intranet, extranet, or custom access. Each of these unique URLs is stored in the configuration database. You can't delete entries for virtual servers that currently host portal sites or document libraries. If an entry has been deleted but URLs for that mapping ID still exist in the index, the server farm administrator must update the content indexed in order to update the URLs. If you have configured your website in IIS to use SSL, you need to change the extranet outbound URL to use HTTPS instead of HTTP. Once we have this mapping in place, when our server gets a request from the extranet for our URL, it will be routed correctly. If you are using shared services, where portal site services are shared across server farms, you must manually synchronize the alternate access entries for the parent server farm and all child server farms. So if you add, change, or delete an alternate access setting entry on the child server farm, you must add, change, or delete the entry on the parent server farm as well. Now that we have configured the URL for the extranet, we can add some users that will be able to access our site from the extranet. As with the other settings in SharePoint, we must associate this setting with the web application. We'll associate it with the web application for our portal site. The security policy will apply to requests made through the specified zone, the extranet. You can also apply a policy to all zones. A policy for all zones is only valid for Windows users. We can enter usernames, group names, or email addresses. Usually, when you are giving access to users over the extranet, you will want to restrict access. Users of the extranet will likely be given read access. However, the users will probably be restricted from writing or modifying information on the site. Security settings are important in any deployment scenario. If you give users the ability to upload or download to your site, you will want to make sure your environment is secure. One setting with WSS 3.0 will allow you a measure of control over security. You can configure antivirus settings to integrate into your portal site. An antivirus program needs to be installed on your server in order for these settings to function. SharePoint gives you the option to scan documents on upload. You also have the option to scan documents on download. If a file gets infected, you can prevent users from propagating the virus to their computers and possibly to others in your organization. Once a document has been identified with the virus, you can choose whether to allow users to still download the infected document. This is not recommended because of the risk of complications on client computers from viruses. Your antivirus program can also be instructed to attempt to clean the infected documents. Depending on your network considerations, you can identify how long you want the virus scanner to run before timing out. If your server response time is slow while scanning, you may want to decrease the number of seconds. Each user who is performing an antivirus scan is using an execution thread. We can restrict the amount of execution threads running at one time. As with antivirus timeout, if your server response time is slow while scanning, you may want to decrease the number of threads allowed for virus scanning. The default is 5. We'll leave it at this. Another security measure with SharePoint is the blocked file types list. A list of file types is automatically listed. You can use the blocked file types page to prevent specific file types from being saved or retrieved from any site on this server. If a user tries to save or retrieve a blocked file type, he or she will see an error and will not be able to save or retrieve the file. To allow a file type that is currently blocked, you must delete it from both the global and web application lists. Shared services are high-value, resource-intensive services that are grouped together. Each server farm can have from one to many shared services. The goal of shared services is to separate services from portals while removing the scale limitation for the number of portals allowed. Also, shared services allow for services to act together as a group. Shared services are also inter-farm capable. But why would you want to share services among farms? First, it results in an optimization of resources. There is only one set of shared services across the entire organization, resulting in elimination of redundant services and access of resources to all the areas in the farm. In addition, there is less impact on the infrastructure when services need to be updated or changed. Next question is, when would you use shared services? You may use them for certain organizational or political concerns, or to have dedicated resources for specific tasks. They also allow for greater scalability. When designing inter-farm shared services, you should strive for consistency in configuration, security, and function. In addition, security implications of shared services involves deciding how to grant administrative access between farms. Now let's look at a demonstration on content management. In this demonstration, we will show how to create a content deployment path and associated content deployment job. Previously, if you wanted to move content from one site collection to another, it was a complex and time-consuming task. A convenient feature with SharePoint 2007 is the ability to create a path and associated job for content deployment. Content deployment is used to deploy content from one site collection into another site collection. The source and destination site collections can be in the same farm or in different farms. In order to use this feature, we must first enable content deployment in various settings. By default, incoming content deployment jobs are not allowed, but we can choose to permit this server farm to receive content deployment jobs. Next, we will specify the server we want to receive incoming content deployment jobs. This server must have enough available disk space to store the incoming jobs, and it must be running an administration web application for the farm. In our demonstration, we only have one server, so we'll leave MOS as the import server. This server will experience additional load when a content deployment job runs, so you will want to ensure that this server is able to handle the load and will not interfere with the user's productivity. We can also specify the server to manage the export of content deployment jobs. By default, content deployment can only occur if the connection between source and destination farms is encrypted using the HTTPS protocol. If you deploy content over a connection that is not encrypted, the username and password you use to authenticate with the destination farm could be intercepted by malicious users, as could the content you are deploying. For this demonstration, we aren't going to require encryption. But in a real deployment scenario, it is highly recommended that you require encryption for stronger security. Now that we have enabled content deployment, we can continue the content deployment process by creating a path. Content deployment is managed using paths and jobs. The content deployment path defines a relationship between a source and destination site collection for content deployment. Once a path is created, jobs can be created and associated with the path to begin deploying content. To begin creating the path, we need to specify a unique name for the path and a description. Next, we need to specify the web application and site collection on the source server. We are going to have our main website, moss.thatwareinc.com, be the source web application, and then choose the site collection at the root of our web application. Your organization will likely have several site collections to choose from, and you can create paths for any or all of them. When deploying the content, we need to specify its destination. We will need to type the URL of a server running central administration. As mentioned, you can either deploy content from within the same server farm or from a different server farm. In this case, we are selecting the same server farm and the URL of our current central administration page. Again, we recommend using encryption, but for this demonstration, we are using the HTTP address. Now we need to connect to the central administration page, so we will enter our administrator credentials. The credentials you use here must have SharePoint Central Administration credentials on the destination server. Once we are connected to the destination server, we can finish specifying the settings for this path. Previous to this demonstration, we created a new web application at port 27012. So now we are going to select the web application as the destination for our content. Finally, we can choose whether or not to deploy the usernames associated with content. Now the path has been completed successfully. The next step is to create a job that is linked to the path we just created. A job is associated with a path. It defines the specific content to be deployed from the source to the destination and the schedule in which the deployment should occur. This job will be associated with only one path. We can select the sites we want to deploy. By default, the complete site collection is selected. However, you can select specific sites if you prefer. There are many options to select for the job deployment schedule. This gives you a great amount of control over when content is deployed and allows administrators to anticipate and monitor jobs. Generally, the only content that is included in a deployment job is content that has changed on the source site since the last time that site was successfully deployed. There's an option to deploy all content, regardless of whether it has changed from the last deployment. When the deployment job is finished, you can choose to send an email notification to certain email addresses. We aren't restricted to only running the job on the schedule we define. By clicking the job, we are presented with options to run the job now. If we are not interested in running the entire job now, but just want to make sure it is working, we have the option to test the job. Let's move on to the next agenda item. Now that we have looked at how to deploy and configure your SharePoint farm, we'll examine some SharePoint administration tasks. Password management with SharePoint 2007 has been simplified. A service account credential change has resulted in there no longer being a need for two accounts with password role. Built-in management with SharePoint 2007 allows for secure credential management and updates. There is also a user interface for changing accounts and command line support for password role. Single sign-on, or SSO, with SharePoint allows a person to enter one name and password to use a variety of applications. In addition, SSO allows for storage and mapping of credentials when connecting with third-party or back-end systems. Many companies already have developed an in-house credential storage system or use a solution other than Microsoft SSO. Instead of maintaining credential mapping in two places, Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 provides a mechanism, pluggable SSO, to specify an alternate SSO provider to the standard SSO provider in Office SharePoint Server 2007. The SSO feature in Office SharePoint Server maps user credentials to back-end data systems. Using SSO, you can access data from servers and services that are external to Office SharePoint Server. From within Office SharePoint Server web parts, you can view, create, and change this data. The SSO feature ensures that user credentials are managed securely, that user permission levels are configured on the external data source are enforced, and that users are not prompted to re-enter their credentials when viewing data from external data sources within Office SharePoint Server. SSO requires the use of Windows authentication for user accounts. SSO can be used in environments where web SSO is used to authenticate user accounts only if the current thread invoking SSO APIs has a Windows identity associated with it. The job service in Microsoft Windows SharePoint Services 3.0 provides facilities for setting up a timed job. These jobs can run either after delaying for a definable interval or during a certain time in the hour, day, week, month, or year. In addition, the job service provides a facility for distributing work among servers in a farm. There are some utilities you can use to manage these timer jobs. First, the timer service, called SP Timer, is a task manager that coordinates actions across the farm and keeps the farm in sync. Timer jobs are modules of code registered with SharePoint that update configuration information or process data. Next, the administrative service, called SPAdmin, performs administrative functions needed for timer jobs. This service is only called by SPTimer and runs as local system. Within SharePoint, there is a timer job status page that lets you view what's running and what isn't. There is also a timer job definitions page that gives you options to control the timer jobs. We are going to look at timer job and service account management in the next demonstration. In this demonstration, we will show how to manage timer jobs and service accounts and how to configure Microsoft Single Sign-On. Timer jobs simplify managing repetitive tasks with a simple management interface. Timer jobs are created by the system to perform tasks at regular intervals. We can view timer job definitions. The timer job definitions page lists the timer job title, the associated web application, and the schedule type. There are also some changes we could make to the timer jobs. First, we can change the name of the job. Since there were three change log timer jobs, we might want to change the name so that we can see at a glance which job goes with which web application. Another timer job is timer job status. These are the same jobs listed on the previous page. On both these pages, we can filter the jobs so that we can only view the information that is relevant. Once again, we can view the title of the job, but now it is filtered by web application. This page also lists the server the job is running on, which is useful for a server farm. You can review the status to address any issues. For example, the scheduled page review was aborted. We can also see if a job is currently running, and, if so, the progress of the job. Finally, we can see when the job was last started. Windows services and web applications in the farm are configured upon starting to use an account. For web applications, these are linked to a web application pool. However, we can change these credentials if necessary. We are going to change the credentials for our moss.litwareinc.com application pool. Then we will specify it to use the administrator account. By default, Microsoft Single Sign-On service is not started, so we first need to start the service in order to configure SSO settings. This can be done in the Services console. We'll start the service called Microsoft Single Sign-On Service. The new Microsoft Office System 2007 provides a default SSO for storage and mapping of credentials for use in connecting with third-party or back-end systems. Many companies already have developed an in-house credential storage system or use a solution other than Microsoft Single Sign-On. Instead of maintaining credential mapping in two places, Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 provides a mechanism, pluggable SSO, to specify an alternate SSO provider to the standard SSO provider in Microsoft Office System 2007. If you didn't want to use the default SSO provider, you would need to implement the Microsoft.SharePoint.Portal.SingleSignon.ISSO provider, install it with the Global Assembly cache, and register the new SSO provider with Microsoft Office System 2007. But remember, you can only register a single SSO provider for MOS. Registering a new SSO provider replaces the default SPS SSO provider. We'll be working with the default SSO provider, as this will be the most common scenario. First, you need to specify the SSO administrator account. This will be the name of the group or user account that can set up and manage the SSO service. This account must be a member of the same domain to which the single sign-on service account belongs. In addition to the SSO administrator account, we need to define the Enterprise Application Definition Administrator account. This will be the group or user account that can set up and manage enterprise application definitions. Like the SSO administrator account, this account must be a member of the same domain to which the SSO service account belongs. Database settings will specify the database server that stores the settings and account information for single sign-on. In this case, the database server is MOS. The name of our SSO database is SSO. Ticket timeout amount is the number of minutes to wait before allowing a ticket to timeout. Now we will enter the number of days to hold records in the audit log before deleting. Now that we have set up the server settings, we can use this page to create, backup, or restore the encryption key. The SSO service stores encrypted credentials in a Microsoft SQL Server database. All credentials in the credential store are encrypted using the SSO encryption key. When you configure SSO for the first time, the encryption key is created automatically. You can regenerate the key if required and re-encrypt the credential store. For example, you might have a policy to change the key after a certain amount of time. If we wanted to re-encrypt the credentials for the single sign-on database, we would select this option. This task runs in the background, so we'd need to consult the event log for the status of this task. If we didn't want to re-encrypt the existing credentials with the new encryption key, users would need to re-enter their credentials. In addition, administrators for enterprise application definitions would need to re-enter group credentials. It is recommended that you back up the encryption key after you create it. SharePoint will back up the encryption key to a removable disk drive. Since the encryption key is necessary to ensure access to passwords stored in the SSO database after the database is restored, it could be used to gain access to all credentials stored within the SSO service. So if the credentials were available to untrusted users, they could be used to gain unauthorized access to computer resources. Therefore, the encryption key should be saved onto a removable storage device and stored in a secure location. Since we don't have the necessary backup device installed, we'll skip this step. You can also use this page to restore the encryption key from a removable disk. For each enterprise application, there is a corresponding enterprise application definition configured by an administrator. This application definition is used by a web part to integrate with the enterprise application within a portal site. The application definition controls how credentials for a particular business application are stored and mapped. The code within the web part uses the application definition to retrieve the credentials that are used to integrate with an enterprise application. This process is transparent to the portal site users. There are two primary types of enterprise application definitions used with the SSO service: individual enterprise application definitions and group enterprise application definitions. With individual application definitions, each user knows and can manage his or her own credentials stored within the enterprise application definition. With group enterprise application definitions, the individual user does not know his or her credentials stored within the enterprise application definition, but is associated with a managed group account. The SSO administrator, rather than the individual user, chooses the account type when configuring the enterprise application definition. The Enterprise Application Manager account is the Windows Global Group or account that will be used to give access to application definition. This account, or members of this group, have rights to create, modify, or delete application definitions from the SSO administration pages. However, they don't have rights to configure SSO. Instead, only members of the SSO administrator account can configure SSO. The application name is what will be used when creating office data connections, or that developers will use to access the application definition. Now we will type an email address that users can contact for this application. Select Group if you want to connect to the enterprise application with the same account for all users. Or select Individual to connect to the enterprise application with a different account for each user. The Group Using Restricted Account option will connect to the enterprise application with a single privileged account for all users. Only server components that perform additional security policy enforcement after the data is retrieved may use a restricted account. We can choose whether to use Windows authentication when client components connect to the enterprise application. Now we need to select one or more fields to map to the required logon information for this enterprise application. The display names for each field will appear in the logon form for this enterprise application. For the password field, we'll have SharePoint display the name password. Clicking Yes for mask will hide the text typed by the user. This helps ensure that sensitive information, such as a password, is not displayed. In this situation, the username will be displayed, but the password will not. Another administrative operational task is disaster recovery. There are several disaster recovery methods, beginning with content recovery. This is the most basic recovery method. Content recovery can be accomplished with the Recycle Bin or the STS Admin utility. The Recycle Bin functionality is similar to that of the Windows Recycle Bin. New to this version, the Recycle Bin provides two stages of file retrieval. In the first stage, when an item is deleted, it is removed from its list and placed into the Recycle Bin. On the Recycle Bin page, you have the option to restore or permanently delete any item. Restoring a document will simply move the item from the Recycle Bin back to its original list, making sure that the file name doesn't conflict with existing files. In addition to the basic Recycle Bin functionality, the Site Collection Administrator has the option to automatically permanently delete items that have been deleted for a specified amount of time. The second stage of the Recycle Bin stores items that users have deleted from the Recycle Bin for easier restoration when needed. This second stage adds to space requirements, which can be enlarged by a specific percentage. When you enable the second stage recycle bin for a web application, you must designate how much disk space is available to the second stage recycle bin as a percentage of the quota allotted to the web application. For example, if you've allotted 100 megabytes of space to the web application, allotting a 50% quota for the second stage recycle bin allots 50 megabytes for the second stage recycle bin, and 150 megabytes for the web application as a whole. You may allot up to 1,000% of the second stage recycle bin quota. The STS admin utility can back up my sites and divisional site collections in a single server farm configuration. By using this utility to back up my sites and site collections, you can restore site collections without having to overwrite all the portal databases. You can back up an entire divisional site collection and all the sites and content beneath it, but not an individual subsite. However, you can restore content and subsites within a site collection by restoring the site collection to a different site and manually copying the lost data to the original location. The backup file includes subsites, pages in the sites, files and document libraries or lists, security and permission settings, and feature settings. You should note that using an stsadmin.exe backup script affects performance on the server farm, because the backup process takes up both memory and processing power. If you choose to schedule stsadmin.exe backups in a script, be sure to run the script when server farm usage is light. There are several more disaster recovery methods you can choose from. A mirror or failover farm involves replicating the primary farm on a secondary system. In this situation, SQL log shipping transfers content database data. In the event of a disaster, the router can switch the traffic in minutes. SQL Server backup and restore is typically used by large organizations with SQL Server tools already implemented and by those with off-site data centers. The person responsible for the databases, regardless of the application, is a database administrator, rather than the SharePoint Central administrator. Using SQL Server to backup your databases allows the ability to schedule backup tasks and provides backup logs for the database administrator to review the success or failure of a job. You can also use the built-in SharePoint Backup Restore utility. The Data Backup and Restore utility is installed by default when Office SharePoint Server 2007 is installed. You can run the Data Backup and Restore utility from any of the front-end web servers in the server farm. SQL Server 2000 client tools must also be installed on the front-end web server from which backups and restores are performed. The SharePoint Portal Server Data Backup and Restore utility backs up and restores all databases within the server farm or all databases on a single site. It also restores content indexes and content sources on the corporate portal. In addition, you can use this utility to back up Windows SharePoint Services site databases, except for the database in the baseline architecture, with a separate Windows SharePoint Services front-end server farm. Finally, this utility restores an index server in a disaster recovery scenario. Let's take a closer look at disaster recovery. In this demonstration, we'll show various ways to prepare for disaster recovery. There are several ways to prepare for disaster recovery. In most cases, you will want to perform backups of crucial information. Microsoft Office System 2007 provides built-in functionality to perform backups from central administration. In the case of a disaster, you could also use central administration to restore your site from a previous backup. If you aren't sure what you want to backup, you can view the descriptions listed. In most cases, you will want to backup the entire farm, although if your farm is large, you may only want to backup specific components. We can perform two types of backup. The first choice is the full backup, which will backup the selected content with all history. The second option is a differential backup, which will only backup changes to the selected content since the last full backup. You can backup your site on the local disk, or you can specify another location to store the backup files. Each backup job is stored in a separate subdirectory at the location you specify, and each object is backed up to an individual file in that subdirectory. Once you have started the backup, you can use this page to view the status of the current backup and restore jobs. While SharePoint prepares for the backup, it may take a minute for the backup to start. Once the backup does start, relevant details are displayed. We can view the current phase of the backup process. For example, right now, SharePoint says it's in the process of backing up. It also shows any warnings or errors on the backup and restore status page. In addition to viewing the current backup status, you can view the history of backup and restore jobs. Another disaster recovery option is to use the command line to perform a backup. stsadmin.exe can be used for many SharePoint operations. With regards to a backup, you can either do a site collection backup or a full backup with this tool. A site collection backup takes considerably less time than a full backup. By using the overwrite command, we will overwrite previous backup files. The command line user interface is more extensible, making it easier to script common tasks such as this. The operation completed successfully message will be displayed when the operation is finished. If there were any errors or problems with the backup, this would be displayed instead. Then you could address those issues to ensure that you have a complete backup in the case of a disaster. In addition to backing up site data, you might want to backup the entire database inside of SQL Server 2005. This will provide an additional level of protection in case you need to recover lost data. We will backup the SharePoint config database that holds the configuration data for our site. You'd probably want to perform backup on all the databases that are used by SharePoint. Once again, we have a couple options for the backup. You can choose either a full or differential backup, or a backup of just the transaction log. Then we can choose the backup component, either the database or files and file groups. Other options include the ability to change the name, description, and expiration of the backup. Once we select the backup location, the backup will start. We will get a message letting us know that the backup completed successfully. A disaster recovery plan can involve one or more of these backup procedures. You will need to determine what is best for your organization. In most cases, you'll want to perform regular backups to ensure that all new data is included in the backup in the case of a disaster. SharePoint databases reside on a SQL server. However, in a single server topology, a full version of SQL Server is not necessary. Since this is the least common scenario, most businesses will need to perform SQL maintenance in addition to Office SharePoint Server maintenance. First, administrators will want to monitor the transaction log and perform maintenance as necessary. As with all servers in your organization, you should always make sure your servers are up to date with the newest software updates. Your SQL Server should be current with the most recent updates. You will also want to manage your SharePoint database on the SQL Server. This involves determining the SharePoint sites per database and setting SharePoint quotas to limit the site size. Patching and service patch maintenance for SharePoint takes the standard Microsoft approach for updates. There have been several widely publicized attacks and vulnerabilities related to Microsoft software. Many organizations with proactive security patch management in place were not affected by these attacks because they acted on information that Microsoft made available in advance of the attack. You want to make sure that each computer in your topology is protected against such attacks. Since updates must be run on each computer, you will want to minimize the downtime for patches. The recommended approach is to begin by pulling one or two servers out of the rotation. Then you would apply the update to the server. After you put the server back into the rotation, you would remove the remaining servers and apply the updates to those servers. Finally, you would add the remaining servers back into rotation. Microsoft Systems Management Server, or SMS 2003, is a preferred mechanism for deploying and managing the distribution of software updates to a large number of clients. It provides functionality essential for a successful deployment, such as inventory functions, scheduling abilities, and status reporting. Using SharePoint 2007 will help you lower your overall total cost of ownership, or TCO. This is accomplished through the achievement of the overall goals of simplicity, consistency, and extensibility. Deployment with SharePoint has been improved to be more streamlined and provide easier administration. Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 includes advanced extranet support to provide better URL translation. There is also support for inter-farm shared services, which results in a better optimization of resources. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/technet/dsk-102 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from other publishers. Microsoft SharePoint 2007 Development Unleashed discusses the various uses of Microsoft SharePoint 2007 from a developer standpoint. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, or MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals who support and implement solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. The courses that best support this session are Getting Started with Windows SharePoint Services 3.0 and Getting Started with Microsoft Office SharePoint Server 2007 Beta. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you set yourself apart from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available. Starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, or MCP, you can become a fully certified System Administrator, MCSA, System Engineer, MCSE, or Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you might find interesting. To help explain this in more detail, please welcome Caroline McGrath, TechNet Relationship Marketing Manager.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription. What is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including two free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace. E-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription. That's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of three support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, the Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, News Groups, User Groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.